Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Rob Matheson. Many countries have abandoned the aim of stopping all COVID-19 infections, but in China, a handful of cases is still enough to trigger lockdowns, mandatory tests, and travel restrictions for the world's largest population. Why are leaders so determined to pursue their so-called zero COVID strategy? And how will they deal with the fallout in the economy and the lives of 1.5 billion Chinese? Okay, let's bring in our guests. In Shanghai, we have Dan Wang, chief economist at the Hang Seng Bank in China. In Barcelona, Jeffrey Lazarus is head of the Health Systems Research Group at the Barcelona Institute for Global Health. And in Nottingham, Steve Tsang is director of the China Institute at Source University of London. Welcome to the program. Thank you very much indeed for being with us. Professor Tsang, I want to start with you. China now has COVID in its various forms. It's got the Lunar New Year holiday. Millions of people are hoping to travel. And the Winter Olympics in February. Now, I've seen this described as a perfect storm for China. Is it?
Well, I think the scale of the challenge for the Chinese authorities will be very significant. Omicron is different from various variants before. So the challenge will be significant, but the zero COVID policy will stay. I don't really see much scope for the Chinese government to change that policy unless Xi Jinping says so.
Dan Wang, China's strict approach worked in the early days. There is an argument for suggesting that it was brought in a little bit later than it should have been, but nevertheless, it seemed to work. The economy was, of course, the only one to grow in a significant way in 2020. What kind of impact do you think the continuation of the zero COVID approach is going to have on China's economy now?
Well, in the past 2 years, it is safe to say that a zero COVID strategy has done China more good than bad. Because we've been tracking the performance of 9 different industries in China, and it looks like the negative impact of the zero COVID strategy was concentrated in catering, tourism, and part of the transportation that's related with tourism. But when it comes to industrial production, agriculture, and several other type of high-end services, the zero COVID strategy actually had positive impact, especially for industrial production. And we knew in the beginning of the COVID, China had contained the spread of the pandemic, and that gained China more time to become really the manufacturing center for the world. And that's why the export has been so strong throughout the last 2 years. Mm. I do agree that this zero COVID strategy has become more a burden now, but in the past 2 years, it was successful.
Yeah, the manufacturing industry in China is being hit nevertheless, isn't it? We are seeing factories which are being prevented from going to full capacity because of staff shortages, because of course, not just Omicron, but COVID, the Delta variant as well. Longer term, do you think that if this is allowed to run, if not unchecked, then out with the limits of the Chinese authorities' ability to contain it, do you think that this is going to have a knock-on effect in terms of the supply chains around the world?
Well, this answer is actually depending on how other emerging economies are doing. Because if we have more COVID variants in the future, and you can see how different governments are dealing with the Omicron, it's not very well. So given what we have now, probably the reconstruction and the build-up of the supply chain capacity in those other exporting countries will take 1 to 3 years. And for China, it will benefit further from the zero COVID strategy if the rest of the world cannot get it together. Mm. So I don't think China is really being the disruptive power for the global stability of the supply chain. It is more of a stabilizing power at this point. Mm.
Jeffrey Lazarus, lockdown policies do seem to contain the virus, but they only, if I understand it correctly, work if you have all the ancillary backups once you actually remove those lockdowns to be able to continue to contain the virus. Do you think that China is in a position to be able to do that?
I do think that China is in a position to do it. Whether they do it or not is another question. So what we're talking about are when as restrictions are gradually removed, is ensuring that people are safe so that they all have the high quality face masks they need, which China should certainly be able to provide, and that ventilation is improved. So ventilation in places of work, in the manufacturing centers, but also in the homes, restaurants, bars, theaters, and so on. So that's going to require some effort in making sure that proper ventilation is in place and ensuring that people do always wear the high quality face masks. With Omicron, it's so transmissible that it's very difficult to maintain a zero COVID policy. We already see almost 1.5% of the population in lockdown, and that's only with around 200 or 300 reported cases a day. So there's probably even more cases that aren't being reported. And as Omicron spreads, I think it will get harder and harder to maintain that kind of zero COVID policy.
Steve, we were talking earlier about the number of areas that were being affected by the continuing presence of the virus. I mean, the industrial city of Xi'an is going into, I think, its third week. How are people in China reacting? What's your take on that?
Well, I think overall, the majority or the overwhelming majority of people in China support the zero COVID policy. This is what they have been told us, a key policy to make China successful in the last 2 years. And many people do feel it that way. And most people don't understand how Omicron is different. But for the people in the cities where they are suffering from the lockdown, I think you may get a rather different sense of how people feel about the zero COVID policy. You will have a much more mixed response among people who are being affected, particularly those who are having difficulties getting supplies, food, for example.
Just to be clear, who is the target, if you like, of their anger? Are they gearing it towards the central authorities in Beijing and in China, or are they talking about the way the local authorities are handling this?
Well, the way how the Chinese government deal with this sort of thing is that it is never the mistake of the central government in terms of overall policy. It is always at the local level where the implementation of the policy is problematic. And therefore, any public anger should focus on that, and the central government will fix that. Now, at the moment, I think that is still going to work in China. But if we see much more lockdowns being put in place in Chinese cities or across the country more generally, it will become much more difficult to maintain this particular narrative.
Jeffrey, the Sinovac vaccine, I have read that there are some doubts over its effectiveness, its overall effectiveness against certain elements of COVID. Do you think, given what you were saying about the additional things that the Chinese government has to have in place in order to back up the lockdowns and the lifting of lockdowns, do you think that the vaccination process in China is going to be effective enough that it will help to contain the virus should the lockdowns be lifted?
I'm not sure that vaccination will be enough. We've seen with the other vaccines, certainly in Europe, for example, with Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Janssen, that it's protecting against severe symptoms, which is good for individuals, good for the health system so it doesn't become overwhelmed, but it's not really limiting so much the spread. And I think that's going to be the case as well in China with the vaccines they're using. So when I mentioned were the additional measures that need to be in place, of course, in addition to the vaccination.
Dan Wang, if China isn't able to contain this spread, as many other governments around the world haven't been able to do either, and as a result, more and more people are off work for prolonged periods of time, what do you think that's going to mean for China's own economy? Because people are staying at home, obviously they're spending less.
Well, there is a big compromise being made between what's the best and what's possible. So China now is trying to contain the pandemic in the way, probably the only way, that it knows how. And people can still remember vividly what happened in Wuhan in early 2020, when most people were locked at home and the transportation was paralyzed. Also, on top of that, there was a run on hospitals. And that's the most scary part. So now I'm living in Shanghai. Even for myself, I sometimes will go to hospital for like the annual body checkup and things like that. Even without COVID, there are not many COVID cases here. Even without that, the hospitals I went to are all very crowded. So just imagine with more COVID cases, even if it's Omicron, that's not really as damaging as Delta, there would be a run on hospitals and it will be out of control. So the government will try their best to contain this virus at whatever cost it takes, at least until the end of October this year, after the 20th plenum. Mm.
Professor Chiang, the Chinese government is encouraging people not to travel for the Lunar New Year. The previous time that it did that, if I understand it correctly, it basically stopped people traveling by stopping the trains. Do you think it's going to do something as draconian as that this time round, or is there going to be a different approach?
I think they will try to avoid stopping train services, which will make people feel that it's like an effective lockdown of part of the transport system. I think they will try to do everything they can to contain any spread to localities, but discourage people from traveling. I think it's going to be a very, very difficult call to make, and it's very difficult to make it completely effective. For a lot of people in China, this is the only time in the year when they have a chance to see their families, and therefore, just encouragement for them to not travel really is not going to be very effective, in my view.
What kind of options do you think are open to the authorities other than simply asking people to stay at home?
I think if you are seeing significant increase in cases, then the likelihood is that they will actually suspend some of the train services so that people will have to stay where they are. I think the importance, the central importance of the zero COVID policy is so clearly enshrined in the bureaucratic rule book at the moment that it will be very difficult for anybody at the operational level to do anything that suggests he or she is not implementing the zero COVID policy with enthusiasm. Mm.
Dan Wang, we were talking earlier about the fact that it's the run-up to the 2022 Winter Olympics coming up. Now, this is a significant global public image event for China. China's global image is essentially embedded with that, but it's also embedded in with the way that it's handling COVID. If the spread is not limited, if it's not contained, what kind of impact do you think that's going to have on China's global image when it's been so adamant that it's going to maintain a COVID zero policy?
I think China is facing this dilemma because it has been closing the border for so long. Although now it allows more athletes and relevant personnel to come in with athletes, it's still a very closed country now compared to what we had 2 years ago. So the policies that the central government in China are making will have a different image from before because miscommunication happens in this situation. We have seen, I'll quote the words of some of my foreign friends, the exodus of foreigners from China, because either they haven't been seeing their family for 2 years, they just have to, and the cost of that would be they need to leave their job in China, or they stay, but then they have to endure this long time of loneliness and a potential change of visa policies and tax code. So things have become quite difficult for China. And the Winter Olympics is only a small part of that story. I know it represents a image for China kind of in a similar way as the 2008 Summer Olympics. But back then, it was such an open country and people had hope. Everything seemed possible. And now, during COVID, it has become so difficult for the ordinary people. And very unfortunately, most of the cost have been borne by the individual families, like in Xi'an, like in Wuhan. And the benefit is mostly towards the industrial sectors, those people or entities that have capitals. So I don't know if it's possible for China to reverse its image in the international stage anytime soon. It just have to try very hard.
Jeffrey Lazarus, in terms of the way that these decisions are made, it certainly seems to be, from what Steve Tsang was saying, it's a top-down approach. This is the policy of the central government, and therefore it has to be enacted by local authorities. In your experience, sort of widening it out around the world, as it were, is that something that actually is effective? Because as Dang Wang was saying, there is an element of, or there's a potential for miscommunication, and we have seen certain cases of that in China, particularly over the last year. Is that the most effective way to deal with this?
Around the world, we've seen that has not been the approach that's been working. The miscommunication, the lack of communication, the feeling from the population of not understanding why the government's making the decisions they're making, the changes they make that aren't being communicated well. Country after country, anywhere you look, communication has been a major problem. There hasn't been this collaborative approach in most cases towards addressing the pandemic. But the current situation in China also reminds me of how certain infectious diseases were handled during the time of the former Soviet Union, for example, tuberculosis. So they're similar to the detention centers that China has. If you tested positive for TB, you were taken out of your place of work, taken away from your family, and put into centers, sometimes for as long as a year or even longer, to address your tuberculosis. And that led people to avoid being detected. So they avoided getting tested. And I'm afraid that might happen in China as well, although I understand that there's some pretty draconian mass testing policies in place. But in general, the top-down approaches are just not working. And I'm worried that it probably won't work in China as well.
Steve Tsang, we saw in the early days of the outbreak at Wuhan, one of the issues, if I understand it correctly, was an element of miscommunication or interpretation of the situation on the ground compared to what decisions would have been made further up the chain, that local authorities were making decisions in an effort, if nothing else, to either not do anything until the situation rectified itself or became more apparent, or they did almost too much, and in fact, the lockdowns were more severe than the central authorities would have wanted. Why is there this apparent, at least apparent to outsiders, disconnect between the central control, the central authority, and the local authorities on the ground?
Because of the way how the Communist Party system actually functions. On the one hand, the party controls everything from the very top down. And this is something that Xi Jinping himself has said, make it very clear. The party leads everything, and the core leader leads the party. And then you have the contrary requirements that the core leader in particular is and can never be wrong. And the party central also cannot be wrong. So you put the party leaders and officials at the provincial or local level in an impossible position that they have to get it right. And getting it right means delivering the right result. And if they adhere strictly to directions from the above and that policy happened to be wrong, then they are the one who are responsible for making that mistake. And likewise, if they use initiative and try something different and that doesn't work, they are left holding the cane as well. This is where we are in the way how the Chinese system works. Mm.
Dan Wang, President Xi Jinping is expected to seek a third term later on this year. The Chinese Communist Party is going to hold its 20th Party Congress in the coming months. President Xi arguably is pretty much certain he's going to get his third term. But at the same time, he does need to demonstrate that he is running a stable country, because stability is core to the tenets of the Communist Party in China, isn't it?
Well, stability is certainly the key word for the central government economic work conference in December. And I can see from the economic perspective, that means China has to maintain a certain level of growth. So for the governing capacity, I think China now is at a very stable stage, as reflected in its ability to contain the virus spread, its ability to maintain a very stable supply. And for a country of this size, I would say that you cannot have a better result by disrupting the economic stability. I don't think there is no cost for such an approach, but every country has to deal with its legacy system. And in the US, I do have a lot of friends facing different problems, like, say, the goods shortage, which is not a problem at all in China. But they do, those people in America, they do enjoy the freedom now to travel around the country or even outside the country. Many people in China would want the similar kind of freedom. But still, people here respect authorities. They have automatically this kind of collective thinking. They would like to maintain the current situation and do not want the pandemic get out of control. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it is why that China and most Asian countries are able to have a relatively low infection rate of COVID, but it would also be at the cost of jeopardizing individual freedom to choose. Mm.
Jeffrey Lazarus, we're into the final seconds of the program. So if I could just ask you, and this is perhaps a bit unfair, but in a couple of sentences, given everything that we've heard today about the way that the decision-making process is structured, do you think that China, given your experience, is going to be able to adapt the way that it handles this COVID crisis in order to be able to contain it?
I hope they will, but we've seen the zero COVID policy fail in Australia. We've seen challenges in countries like New Zealand. So they're going to have to probably tighten up and have even more draconian restrictive policies. But the way Omicron transmits, I'll be very surprised if we don't start to see case numbers going up in the coming weeks or months. Another question is if they will be transparent about their numbers. Mm. That can be more challenging in terms of cases, but in terms of hospitalizations, it would start to become apparent to everyone. Mm.
I want to say thanks to all our guests, Dan Wang, Jeffrey Lazarus, and Steve Tsang. And that's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Calvin Ng, Osama Alani, Abdurrahman Wahsami, and Jim Gilchrist. Studio Sound was by Yasir Rahmani. The program was edited by Manish Matai, Lynn Nguyen, and Joe DeFreyes. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. We're going to be back again on Tuesday.